Ayodhatan apradayai bhyo. Yo bhunkte stena eva saha.
Yo bhunkte stena eva saha.
Ishtan bhogan hi vo deva.
Ishtan bhogan hi vo deva.
Dasyante yagya bhavita.
Dasyante yagya bhavita.
Tayodatam apradayai bhyo.
Tayodatam apradayai bhyo.
Yo bhunkte stena eva saha.
Yo bhunkte stena eva saha.
Ishtan.
Ishtan.
Desired.
Bhogan.
Necessities of life.
Necessities of life.
He.
Certainly.
Vaha.
Unto you.
Deva.
Deva.
The demigods.
Dasyante.
Will award. Yagya Bhavita. Being satisfied by the performance of sacrifices. Tahi. By them. Dattan.
Things given.
Apradaya. Without offering. Abhyaha. To these demigods. Yaha.
He who.
Bhunkte.
Enjoys.
Stenaha.
Thief.
Eva.
Certainly.
Saha.
He.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Purport. The demigods are authorized supplying agents on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Therefore, they must be satisfied by the performance of prescribed yajnas. In the Vedas, there are different kinds of yajnas prescribed for different kinds of demigods, but all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice to the demigods is recommended. According to the different material qualities of the persons concerned, different types of yajnas are recommended in the Vedas. Worship of different demigods is also on the same basis, namely, according to different qualities. For example, the meat eaters are recommended to worship the goddess Kali, the ghastly form of material nature. And before the goddess, the sacrifice of animals is recommended. But for those who are in the mode of goodness, the transcendental worship of Vishnu is recommended. But ultimately, all yajnas are meant for gradual promotion to the transcendental position. For ordinary men, at least 5 yajnas, known as Pancha Mahayajna, are necessary. One should know, however, that all the necessities of life that the human society requires are supplied by the demigod agents of the Lord. No one can manufacture anything. Take, for example, all the eatables of human society. These eatables include grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, sugar, etc. for the persons in the mode of goodness, and also eatables for the non-vegetarians, like meats, none of which can be manufactured by man. Then again, take for example heat, light, water, air, etc., which are also necessities of life. None of them can be manufactured by the human society. Without the Supreme Lord, there can be no profuse sunlight, moonlight, rainfall, breeze, etc., without which no one can live. Obviously, our life is dependent on supplies from the Lord. Even for our manufacturing enterprises, we require so many raw materials like metal, sulfur, mercury, manganese, and so many essentials, all of which are supplied by the agents of the Lord, with the purpose that we should make proper use of them to keep ourselves fit and healthy for the purpose of self-realization, leading to the ultimate goal of life, namely liberation from the material struggle for existence. This aim of life is attained by the performance of yagyas. If we forget the purpose of human life and simply take supplies from the agents of the Lord for sense gratification, and become more and more entangled in material existence, which is not the purpose of creation, certainly we become thieves. And therefore we are punished by the laws of material nature. A society of thieves can never be happy, because they have no aim in life. The gross materialist thieves have no ultimate goal of life. They are simply directed to sense gratification. Nor do they have knowledge how to perform yagyas. Lord Chaitanya, however, inaugurated the easiest performance of yagya, namely the Sankirtan yagya, which can be performed by anyone in the world who accepts the principles of Krishna consciousness. Ishtan bhogan hivo deva dasyante yagya bhavitaha tire dattan apradayebhyo yubhumde stena evisaha. So Krishna here refers to people who are taking from the demigods but not reciprocating. We all are dependent on these providers. We cannot live our lives. The material existence always has three aspects: adi bhautik, adi daivik, adi atmik. The soul is there, but he cannot function, he cannot survive independently in material existence. Not because of any limitation, but because he's in an unnatural environment. In this unnatural environment of the material world, first of all, he's encumbered with a dead material body. And the living force and dead matter are by nature basically incompatible. There must be an intermediary that brings the dead matter apparently to life. We cannot animate this dead body by ourselves. We need the help of the adhyatmic, or the adidaivic, the demigods. I think that I'm, by my free will, moving this finger, this small finger on my hand. But only by the sanction of a particular demigod is this finger moving. I may express the desire, and it may be channeled through my brain, through my nervous system. But it's only possible for that finger to move because the demigod of that finger is empowering me to do that. Otherwise, the finger will be paralyzed, and with all my thought power, I will not be able to move it. Adidaivic influence is required. We are dependent on the demigods for every movement of our life. The most basic activities of breathing, of our heart beating, of digesting our food. What to speak of more complex and more sophisticated operations? Everything is dependent on the sanction and control of those demigods. We are taking, but in modern life, modern materialistic civilization, we're taking but we're not acknowledging. It's like stealing electricity, just tapping, putting a wire, you know, hooked into the mains illegally and not paying any bill. And many people may get away with it, but it is criminal. And because of it, there's not enough electricity for the people who do pay for it. And the bills are higher than they would be otherwise. It's theft. Anyone who taps into the... Everybody does. Everybody uses the benefits of the demigods. So anybody who does not pay his bill is a thief. We're all using the resources, many different kinds of resources, and there's so many different demigods. From one point of view, we're obliged to each of those demigods.
Object.
Even millions of them. We could spend our whole lives performing sacrifices without absolving our debts. Theoretically, at least if you look at it from that ritualistic point of view. So, it's only decent to offer worship to the providers of what we live on. We can try to worship millions of demigods, or pick out a few of them, or one of them who's we consider is very important. Or, if we have the blessing of divine knowledge given to us by the association and the kindness of the Vaishnavas, then we can understand that there is one Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all of these devatas are simply his agents. So we can satisfy all the agents by satisfying the supreme proprietor and controller. This is explained to us in the Isha Upanishad. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kinchit jagat yam jagat. Everything is owned and controlled by Isha, the personality of Godhead. So the system of complex sacrifices, offerings to various deities, is there for people who can't understand, as Prabhupada says in the purport, who are not able to understand what God is, what is the personality of Godhead, and how he's the ultimate supplier. And it's only through his energies and through his personal agencies that they're distributed. So we can accomplish the payment of our debts by simply offering sacrifice directly to the Lord. In different ages, it's done differently. By meditation in the Satyayuga, by yajna, but with God, with understanding that God is that Vishnu is the actual recipient. That is the method of Krishna consciousness in the Treta Yuga. The outer form of a ritual sacrifice, but done in Krishna consciousness. And in Dwarpa Yuga, deity worship is the authorized method of becoming Krishna conscious. In Kali Yuga, Harinam Sankirtan. Hearing and chanting, simply hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, we have many sacrifices that have to be performed. Prabhupada mentions Pancha Mahayagya. This is obligatory for all grihasthas, according to the Karmakanda system. Every day, even if you're not a Vedic Brahmana, then you have extra obligations. You have to keep the sacred fire perpetually lit in your house. You have to perform two sacrifices every day, Agnihotra, in the sunrise and sunset. Other sacrifices have to be performed on the new moon and full moon days. And the Agrahayana sacrifice has to be performed in the fall, at the time of the harvest. These are the minimum of obligations for a Vedic Brahmin. But even if you're not in the Vedic line, initiated and given the sacred fire installed in your house, even if you're an ordinary grihastha, you have these five yagyas, household yagyas, that have to be performed every day. Because there are panchasunas, five slaughterhouses in the house. Even your strict vegetarian, even your paka vegetarian, you've got five slaughterhouses in your house. I don't know, can I remember them? The broom, the fireplace, the mortar, or you're grinding, because you're killing. When you sweep the ground, you're killing little insects. When you light the fire, you're also killing small creatures. When you grind your rice for the dosha, you're also... When I first came to Bangalore, I lived there for about 8 months, and we had a flat on the ground floor, and we'd hear the sound upstairs. It sounded like dancing class, some loud noise on the floor. What it was a dry grinder, big granite thing in the sink, on the sink, the hole in the big stone, grinding the rice and the urd dal. Dry grinder, just a stone. but it sounds like people dancing from upstairs, downstairs. This is also Suna. Slaughterhouse. What are the other two?
One is drinking water.
Drinking water. The well, that's water. Anyway, and then you have to do five different sacrifices every day to atone. Simple sacrifices, like balidan, offering a little bit of food off your plate before you take. And some offering to the pittas, something to the devas, something to the rishis, and to all the bhutas. That's the balidan. Five yagyas every day. Small, but if you fail to do them, then you go to hell. This is obligation for non-devotees. A Vaishnava is not obliged because he's performing Mahamahayagya. All the yagya is wrapped into one. In this age, in the form of Harinam Sankirtan. You don't have to, do a whole thing, sprinkling water all over your plate and throwing, little pieces of prasadam around. You just have to chant Hare Krishna and offer the food to Vishnu, to Krishna. This is our sacrifice. If we don't do it, we are ungrateful. We are stealing from God. Somebody is a big thief, stealing on a big scale, a total rascal. Another person is a small thief. But they're all thieves. Everyone who's not doing the worship of Lord Vishnu. But modern civilization runs another way. We're thinking, the modern viewpoint is that nature is for us to exploit. And we just think mechanically. And we just, take the resources without considering who provided. We think we can go to the store and pay the store owner, it doesn't matter where he got it from. You know, it's like going to the pawn shop. Do you have an India pawn shop?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So very often you're buying stolen goods. You know? The man is, you know, somebody has stolen the thing, he brings it to the pawn shop and sells it at a cheap price. And then you go to the pawn shop and buy it. But what you're buying is stolen goods. So similarly, when you go to any store, these things have been taken from nature without performing sacrifice. Maybe the store owner, you know, waves a little stick of incense at Lakshmi Devi in the morning. But that's not adequate payment for all those items. You know, 10 sticks of incense cost 5 rupees. You know, half a rupee. It's not adequate payment for all those goods that have been stolen from nature. Who do you think Lakshmi is? She's the wife of Lord Narayan. It's all her Prakriti. Prakriti, the wife of Mahadev, is her expansion, just as Mahadev is the expansion of Narayan. So all the goods provided by Prakriti, you've stolen them, and now you're selling it to somebody else. It's stolen goods, everything we buy. So either we're directly thieves, we are in our lives, but we're also collaborating with thieves. We're buying our goods from other thieves. It's all stolen. That's modern civilization. We're not decrying technology, but we are decrying taking the resources from nature without acknowledging where you got them from. You can make very nice things. You can discover all sorts of laws of nature and build your technologies upon them. But it's no excuse for atheism. You know, you have no right to presume that matter is everything, that there is no spiritual basis. Everything that occurs in this world is controlled by living intelligence. If you can do various things with various chemicals, you can take iron and with carbon and other elements, you can turn it into steel with the application of a lot of heat. You can take iron, which is not very flexible as a building. And this is iron, right? It's pretty crude. You can only do certain things with iron. You know, it's not. It's heavy and it's hard to work. When you turn it in, and it very easily becomes rusty. But when you turn the iron into steel, then it is a much more useful and durable item. So you may have discovered the theory and the technology how to make iron into steel. But still, all of those chemical processes involved, all of those physical processes involved, are actually being controlled and arranged by living intelligence. You can talk science and try to describe everything in terms of mechanical laws, but that is only a one-sided view. Behind the mechanism, there's a person. In every single case of anything that happens, you may say the water is falling down the waterfall simply by the force of gravity. But there is living intelligence providing the force of gravity. The intelligence of Lord Anantashesha, the power of Lord Anantashesha, that is gravity. There's a demigod behind every physical phenomena. Otherwise dead matter cannot move, cannot do anything. There cannot be any chemical or physical reactions, any activity in the world without living intelligence. Aparayam atastvanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhuta mahabaho yahidam daryate jagat. Beyond the pancha mahabhutas, and you may divide them up differently, you may divide them up into 111, what is it, 111 elements they have now? 113? I don't know how many. Yeah. Okay. Or you may make a more basic division into just five elements. Anyway, you're talking about inert, about non-living matter. Even your organic compounds are also non-living in themselves. Your complex organic chemicals are no more alive than your artificial intelligence computer is actually conscious. It's not. It may support life, but it's not alive. The material body is not alive. It's very complex, and it's maintained by what we call organic chemistry, but that organic chemistry is still dead. Only by conscious supervision does anything actually happen. Demigods controlling everything. Jivabhutam. The demigods are jivas like us. But they're administrative jivas. They have high positions. They have great powers. Vastly greater powers than we do. They can control entire, they're in their own small departments, they can control what they control throughout the whole universe. The demigod may be only the demigod of this one small finger on the right hand, but he controls that finger on every hand in the universe, in every form of life that has such a finger. I guess only primates have this. But still, there's a lot of fingers. And that one demigod sitting in some, department office, sub-assistant controller of the finger, he's got his office somewhere in Swargaloka, but he's controlling those fingers all over the universe, sitting at his desk. That's very powerful. So these demigods are called Vibhuta. Vibhuta, vastly intelligent. They're much smarter than we are. We may think we're smart. We may have our IQ tests, and a few people may measure over 200 on the scale, and they're considered geniuses. But we cannot even measure the intelligence of the demigods, way off the scale. What is the IQ of a demigod? They're Vibhuta, vastly intelligent. They have to do their job. They have to be aware of much more than we're aware of. So therefore, we do owe our... we owe payment to them. We depend on them for our lives. Either we make our payment in the form of worship to the one person who is the lord of all the demigods, or else we're going to have to deal with each of the demigods separately. We're going to have to go to, pay our bill in all these little departmental offices throughout the demigod bureaucracy. Unless we make one consolidated bill paid, daily to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Harinam Sankirtan. That's the only way to resolve our debt. Devapto, one is no longer a debtor to the demigods, the forefathers, the rishis, and others, if he's taken shelter of Lord Mukunda. Even though he's renounced his material duties, he's excused. He's no longer in debt because he's paying a consolidated bill to the one supreme controller. The complex system of worshiping many demigods through various rituals is only required for those who aren't able to become God-conscious, who can't understand what the personality of Godhead is. Okay, so are there any questions or comments? Yes.
You were saying about Ishavashya, how do we know we are taking only our quota, we are not taking more, or we are taking less? How do we know that I've taken my quota?
Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavastitao Gyatva Shastram Vidhan Uktam Karma Kartam Uharasi. You have to act in this world knowing what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. Which is the same thing as knowing what you're allowed to take and what you're not allowed to take. You know that by hearing it from Shastra. But how do you... So Krishna tells Arjuna at the end of the 17th chapter, or 16th chapter, you should take Shastra as your authority, scripture, to tell you what to do and what not to do. Knowing that, you can act appropriately. And you won't take more than is your fair share. But to know Shastra, we have to go to Guru. Guru and Sadhu. We need all three. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. To get a sound foundation. This table has three legs. I could make a table with a triangular shaped table with only three legs. And it will also stand nicely. But if I reduce it to two legs, it's going to tip over. You know, it won't work with just two legs on one side. Or one leg. You know, I could put one in the middle maybe. But three is required for you know, a solid table. Four is nice because it looks nice. But three is sufficient. So we have three foundations for knowing what to do. We have to hear it from Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Krishna emphasizes Shastra, but how do we know what the Shastra is actually saying unless the interpretation is given to us by Guru? And it should be verified by the community of devotees. How do you know who Guru is? The sadhus can help you find the Guru. And the Guru can explain the Shastra. Or you may not even know the Shastra unless the Guru tells it to you. So that's how you find out. From these three authorities, you find out what you're allowed to take and what is too much.
Yeah. And this book before, he says, Doshal, by satisfying the demigods and the men very sacrifices, he can be happy.
Yes. We can be happy in a miserable place. It's a miserable place because most people come here to be rebellious. But those among the inmates of the material world who volunteer to rectify themselves, they're excused of a lot of the miseries of prison life. Like the good prisoners in the prison, they're given special concessions and special facilities. You know, they're allowed to keep some books in their cell to read, and they maybe even they give them a television set. You know, because they're cooperative. So if we become cooperative with the universal administration, then even though it's a miserable place, our lives are relatively happy. Still, there's plenty of miseries. Even a pure devotee has to deal with material miseries. The body still gets sick, has to die, and there's other miseries beside that that cannot be avoided. They can be mitigated, but not completely avoided in the material world. But anyway, a person who is pious, who's cooperative with the administration of the universe, can be happy. And a person who's pure devotee of God, he will be totally blissful, not just
content, but in full ecstasy, he won't even notice the pain. His body may be in pain, even his mind may be suffering, he won't even notice it. But that's for a pure devotee who's absorbed in transcendental ecstasy. But even the pious people, people in the mode of goodness, they're okay. They're relatively content. We can say happy, relatively sane. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.